And you know today's birthday, the big birthday today, the biggest birthday. It's Mrs. Z's birthday today. That's right, ready. 1981. Beyonce enters. American singer, songwriter, dancer, actress. Started out, of course, with Destiny's Child. I don't know how many Grammy. 22 Grammy Awards. 22. Called the Queen Bee. I remember my godson telling me, one of my godsons, Beyonce's the greatest singer ever. She's the greatest female singer ever. And I looked at him, I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? But, let me stop there. No, she is the best marketed singer of all time. I thought Madonna had it wrapped in terms of marketing. This Mrs. Z, there is nobody, no entertainment act, not even the late MJ, that was marketed like Beyonce. And I'll leave it there. Greatest singer ever? yeah. Anyway, Dean, oh, man. Yeah, I know. Oh, the Beyonce right. People go nuts, man. But I just... greatest singer ever? Please.
Well, you know, it reminds me, you said about the marketing. It reminds me of the story Rush used to tell about when he was new to the business and he learned all of these artists everyone was saying they had to talk about. And he said at the time it was Springsteen. He said all of a sudden overnight he's on every magazine and he's out at 2 a.m. at some bar and there are reporters there. He said, well, how did they know he was going to be there? He said, and that's when I learned it was a PR department, that a lot of these singers rely on PR departments to tell you they're the hot new thing, not take that away from Beyonce or anybody in particular. But the days, I think, when you got ahead on just merit, and I think it's harmful to people who are detracts from people who do have legitimate talent, because we're such a cynical age, because there are so many people who, rather than be the best, just hire a PR firm to tell everybody you're the best, right? So there's a much quicker shortcut than actually working and developing your craft and singing at those bars, as Billy Joel says, where the microphone smells like a beer, that line in Piano Man, and crafting the lines and the lyrics. You know, you have someone else do that, and you just look good, do what we tell you. We'll create some PR, some buzz, some spin. I think that that's the larger point of that as far as it goes and who's the greatest. And you're entitled to your opinion. We're all going to have a different opinion on who's the best.
Exactly. Or among the best is what because when you start trying to narrow it down to one person in the music world, oh, yeah, right. Good luck with that. So, yeah. Dean, Labor Day. Give us a little history on this Labor Day holiday that some people are celebrating today.
Yeah, well, to me, I love that it starts in New York. It starts in New York as the first parade in 1882. I wrote a column on this last year at the New York Sun. And this uplifting spirit that it had just really struck me, because I think we think back to those days. We've all gotten the Hollywood versions of how horrible the labor problems were and how badly people were treated. And this really brought everyone together, 12,000 strong. People were let off of work despite this idea we have of evil robber barons at this point in the Gilded Age. And it just was a chance for the city to come together, and it was so unifying. And what a stark difference this was in 1882 from that story that you sent me from the LA Times about people protesting and trying to just get their voices heard. Apparently they created this new thing, the voice gap, which they feel they don't have at work, that they're getting raises, but that's not enough. They want to be heard more at work. And it mostly aimed at Walmart, aimed at Amazon, companies like that. But at this point, when New York City has that first parade in 1882, people have been working towards that for about 12 years. And they haven't been working with bitterness or with anger or with all the rhetoric that I think we associate with it today, because, of course, there are those PR firms again, right? You're not going to get a lot of retweets online by just being the nicest guy you can be. But this tradition kicks off there. You have 12,000 strong, great parade of working men, as the Sun called it, marching with bright banners and emblazoned sentiments. They're waving American flags. They're wearing costumes. Bands are playing. The sidewalks are just packed with people on this 2-mile route from City Hall to Union Square. You have men, women, children. Everybody is just falling in line in a parade. It's a little bit the opposite, I guess, when you've seen, I'm sure, the NYPD funerals or firemen funerals we have in New York City. And you always stop along the line there on Fifth Avenue when they take them down the fall and then there's a parade. Well, this is a different sort of parade where you weren't asked to just sit on the side respectfully, but people would just join in. And they were given off of work. Their businesses were closed. Bricklayers, clockmakers, all of these people that I feel Labor Day when I look at the holiday at the end of the summer, it completely evolves from just this wonderful day, despite what they said was oppressive heat, of people getting together and not looking to divide, which I think is so much of what we do today. And even the word labor, I mean, you and I worked for Rush for a long time, of course, and we both had that mentality, I'm sure, that we picked up, that a lot of people made unions about divisiveness. And they can do great things, certainly, you know. And so I think that's what I try. When I always try to be positive about things, I try to look at this holiday and say, well, there's positives for it, too. I mean, even Rush used to say, he used to joke that he belonged to a union, and it always made him cringe to say, my union. But, because in the 60s, they had that negative idea. But today, unions, at Gallup's poll just the other day, it has a record high amount of support. And so you hope that they live up to that and that they're worthy of that, I guess you would say. And to me, that's what I think of when I think of Labor Day. It doesn't become a holiday for the whole country. That is also a gradual process. 1894, Congress declares it a federal holiday, but just for federal workers. So it takes a while for all Americans to be able to enjoy that 3-day weekend, but it happens eventually, and we're able to enjoy it today. And I like to thank everybody who went out there in that heat of 140 years ago and just enjoyed that day and said, hey, let's end the summer with a nice long weekend, not something like Memorial Day that's heavy, not something like July 4th even that is very solemn for a lot of people. I know yourself not included, but we have Labor Day where, hey, it's literally do nothing, right? It's literally, hey, you work hard all year, hopefully, but let's just relax on this one day, get a little 3-day weekend, and if you're lucky enough, be able to talk to the great audience at WABC and James Golden.
Wow. Thank you for that wonderful history lesson. Now, you know, the union influence back in early times in this country, of course, was a lot bigger than it is today. I mean, there were times when it was 30% of employees were unionized. Not so anymore. The biggest, in fact, growth in unions are governments. Government unions is where the growth is. But by the way, there are going to be some significant labor issues. There are some strikes going on in Los Angeles right now, and the UAW is threatening a big one. They're looking for a 46% pay raise. They want a 32-hour work week with 40 hours of pay. And this is going to be an interesting case, and there are a lot of issues that they're having, too, that are dealing with electric cars, which they're not as complex as gasoline powered cars to make, and thereby might use less employees. And there are a lot of friction points with that. I'm glad you mentioned the article that I did send you, because it was, and that was in the LA Times. You think trying to get a raise is hard? Try asking for that. And that's what unions are saying. There are more employees who want a voice in their companies. They want to have a say in how things are run, which I think is kind of a growing phenomena in American business. And I wonder if it's going to be successful. These people who are not satisfied with just working, but not to tell the bosses and the management and the owners how to run the company that they work for. What do you think?
Yeah, the voice gap and this whole, I'm just so tired of people naming and inventing new things and talking about them. But it was a very clickbait headline. And I saw it was, I think, originally posted on this United for Respect website. And it just seems so divisive. And they use the term workers, by the way, 23 times. And that's one of those terms that it sets your teeth a little bit on edge because you think it's so dehumanizing and it's so
communist. Workers of the world, unite.
Yeah. Yeah, it puts everybody down. And I say sometimes to my wife, I'll say the horse in Animal Farm, that poor thing that poor horse rather worked and worked and worked. He was an allegory for the working men under communism. And Boxer ends up what? He ends up working himself to death, believing in this revolution. And then he ends up sent off to the glue factory when he can no longer work in that allegory. And I thought too of something that I think people who maybe have that knee-jerk reaction to unions one way or the other, don't forget it was the Solidarity Union, everybody out there, that broke communism, that started the fall of the Eastern Bloc, right?
Boom.
And so anybody who's telling you, well, the unions are the first step, or that, hey, that's the way to go. Hey, that's what Lech Walesa was out there fighting for, his right to unionize, when they said, no, you don't need that now. You have communism. So I think that's an interesting point, too, to remember. It gives us a little broader perspective.
Dean, where can people find you? And thank you for being with us today. Where can people find you?
They can find me at nysun.com, and they can find me at HistoryDean on Twitter and at HistoryAuthor.com. Thank you very much for plugging my website there. I appreciated that. I actually put out a new show today on His Majesty's Airship. It's a great story of adventure, and I think we could so much use that today of flying these big dirigibles like the Hindenburg. You know how that story ends. This one, it's amazing that it was forgotten by history, but forgotten no more. S.C. Gwynne is the author, so if you want to check that out, it's also a video on YouTube, the video version of my interview. Go ahead and check that out. So you can find me everywhere, and I hope again one day soon here on Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour. Thanks for having me.
Dean, always a pleasure. James Golden, a.k.a. Snerdly, here with you. Bo Snerdly's Rush Hour this Labor Day.